Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I can't lie. Today was the first day that it kind of dawned on me. We might not be getting this year back.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, we're on the upslope of the curve of the virus,
yeah.
Right? And you know what every expert is saying is that we want to flatten the curve and make this prolonged, right? Like even if it's the same number of cases, have it
spread them out.
You know, go over a certain course of time, spread them out, so that the hospitals and medical system is not over capacity. But we are still definitely on the upswing, right? What this is going to look like. So, I mean, our concept of this is going to look so different in a week that I'm hoping that it is feasible by July or whatever the projections are that they can be playing at least in fanless arenas. The more it progresses, I agree with you that it seems less and less likely. But like, man, I'm not an expert in that stuff. I'm just trying to listen to them, trying to stay at home as much as I can, and which is really staying at home all the time. And we're all going to go stir crazy with that. But you know, that's. We know what it means to go viral on Twitter, right? And that's because it keeps growing exponentially, yeah. And people share it. And then people share it with the people, you know, people who got it shared with them, share it with other people. Well, it's called going viral for a reason, right? Like, mm-hmm. Because that's how these things work. And so while it doesn't seem like too much now, it's where, you know, what it looks like in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks might be very different. So I have no freaking idea, but I have the same concerns as you.
Is there any circumstance where you would say, you know what, let's just pack this in and see these guys next year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they have to be in a hurry to do that. I don't see reason to make a call. Like, it's just suspended indefinitely. I'm, you know, selfish motivations here as a Laker fan. Mm-hmm. Like, they want to get back at this in September or something like that, and we don't start the following season until January. You know, like, okay, fine. We're going to have all sorts of aspects of society that have to kind of get back to normal that are not used to being disrupted. So I would like this season to continue and not be canceled completely. And I'm perfectly willing to push that into the later months of this calendar year. But there are also so many hurdles in that. And like, those are players that are now all of a sudden under contract for way more than the year,
yep.
That they signed up for. Right. Like, how does that even work? I don't know, man. It's just such uncharted territory. But I would very much wait until making that call.
Yeah, I think it's way too early. It's way too raw to give any hardline analysis on any of this. I also can't help but kind of chuckle at, like, how many technological advances have we made to make it easier to stay at home, to isolate ourselves, right? Netflix, Uber Eats, the Audible, right? You could get your books, like, read to you. You could read. You have access to millions of books on your phone. You have the entire internet where, like, all the information you could possibly need is right in front of you at your fingertips. And then now that people are being told, hey, it's probably a good idea to stay home, everyone's like, you can't control me! Like, guys, we've done everything to make it possible for us to barricade ourselves in our home anyway. Just don't think of it that way. But anywho,
I'm slightly ashamed that this has not made that much of a difference in my day-to-day life. I am scrubbing things down more frequently, and like, I always wash my hands, but I'm like super diligent about that now. That's about it. Like, I can go a few days without leaving my house, working from home and all that, and I've been kind of chuckling at all that. So yes, thankful for all of the changes in technology and that allow this to be not as miserable of an experience as it would have been, you know, 15 years ago.
Yep, absolutely. We are going to, you know, really quickly and awkwardly segue over to today's news. And then I'm basically kind of turning this week into introduction week on the kinds of content that we're going to get that's going to get us through the next 30, 60, 90 days, whatever it might be. And today's introduction, we're going to kind of talk about or discuss what it looks like when we talk about what ifs, right? A favorite topic is always, you know, what might have been, what could have been. Had things gone for the Lakers in the short term, would that have actually hurt in the long term? All that stuff. So in segments 2 and 3, we're going to introduce the concept, and then we're going to give out a couple examples of them and just kind of, you know, really... you know, just kind of scrape the surface on some of those subjects. But today's big news that actually directly affect the Lakers, or somewhat indirectly, was that the Brooklyn Nets, four players from the Nets, including Kevin Durant, tested positive for COVID-19. The last team that the Nets played was the Lakers. And so now the Lakers are being told, hey, actually... You got to be even more careful than you might have been before. And then Woj went into, you know, the NBA extended their credit line, basically doubled it. They talked to one of the foremost experts on epidemics, and, you know, he's saying, guys, this is actually really serious. So, but let's just focus on the stuff that, whether directly, indirectly, impacts the Lakers. Where were you? Paint the room for me when you got that news that, yeah, the Lakers might actually really have to worry even more about this.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, on Twitter as I always am. And,
my phone is like perpetually low on battery right now.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, man, no, just seeing that and just seeing the name, like a name like Kevin Durant carries weight with NBA people and NBA fans, right?
When are you playing?
I think that we're still in the stages of understanding the severity of it. And I think that, you know, just due to the nature of how viruses work, that names like that coming out are actually helpful to people kind of being like, oh, if Kevin Durant got it.
Yeah.
And you know, it sure makes you wish that we could have some tests and, you know, for people that got a little cough
Nice.
Or a little bit of the sniffles, sure would be nice.
I sneezed today and I almost thought, Jen, I got to leave.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, God forbid you do that outside, or if you got to go grocery shopping or something, then yeah, people looking to jump you. But or maybe not. Maybe stare completely away from you. But yeah, like names like Kevin Durant, the gravity of it, like I think makes more and more people go like, oh crap, like this is serious and it's real and it's not that far away. So yeah, man, it's scary. It seems like the NBA has been really encouraging these isolation practices anyway, because the NBA is so intertwined. Like I saw some graphic where it connected all 30 teams together in the span of like 8 days or something like that. Right. Where.
I don't think that factored in referees.
Right. Right. And you're talking like guys are sweating, like when they're
breathing hard
when they talk, or they're breathing hard. They're all up on each other. Just like it's such an environment that goes to your point at the beginning of the show, really about like, this may not be coming back, just due to the nature of how basketball works. But, yeah, man, it's I don't know, man. How do you take the news? It's something that hearing a name like Kevin Durant, you know, like I think it just adds extra gravity for people who may not have been taking it as seriously.
Well, so I think initially, excuse me. Whoop, there it goes. Podcast is canceled. But initially,
I can get it through Skype, thankfully.
Initially, you know, the quote unquote good news was that of the 58 people tested, you know, whether they were actual Jazz players or were kind of around the Jazz, of the 58 people who were tested, only two came back positive, right? It was only Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, initially you were like, all right, you know what, it's not, you know, ideally you wouldn't have any, but given the circumstance in which somebody's going to test positive and given how close a proximity these people interact with each other, only spreading it to one other player here on your team is kind of a best case scenario, it felt like, right? And then you find out Christian Wood in Detroit picks it up. Then you find out, now I don't believe the Jazz interacted with the Nets over the time that the incubation period that Gobert might have been dealing with this. So this really kind of hit home, not just from from the standpoint of it being Kevin Durant and the bigger name and all that, but the sheer number, four Nets is quite, that's more than 30-something percent of, that's the, you know, of their roster. And, you know, I think what we're probably going to see is that number continue to go up as more people get tested. And that's why today was the first day I was like, oh, yeah, we might not get this season back. You know, that today's news made it feel a little bit more real. Now, again, this is really raw, and neither you or I are the kinds of experts where we can speak definitively on any of this. But all I can speak to is how I felt as I received the information. And today was the first day that I said, damn it. damn it, this doesn't feel good, you know?
Yep. Yeah, man.
We just gotta, I do think, and it's funny, Jazz, the people who cover the Jazz and the people who root for the Jazz were kind of touting Gobert, which also, random aside, I can't help but chuckle at how close Gobert is to Goober. Like, if you were to say Goober in France, wouldn't it be Gobert?
Is it time for break yet, Anthony?
Anywho, you were getting like you know, Gobert was seen as this like idiot hero, and you know,
it's like, yes, it's true.
You guys should be thankful for Gobert. I'm like, no, that's not quite how this works.
Yo, your galaxy brain shit on that was just wow.
Oh man, but I will say though that, you know, like the Nets news today, that I think does operate in the way that Jazz fans hope that Gobert's situation might have operated, right? Where so many players, including a super duper star, will make people say, all right, yeah, it's finally time to take this shit a little bit more seriously. And that's all we can really hope for, right? That's I'm not really a religious dude. I've been fucking praying that people will start taking this a little bit more seriously. And if it takes, you know, a situation here where four players out of a roster of 15 do come down with it, and obviously prayers, thoughts, positive vibes all go out to them that they all make full recoveries. But if that's what it takes to get people to finally wake up and start taking social distancing seriously and start being more hygienic, even though you should have been doing that all along, the number of people who like have a problem with washing hands turns out makes me a little nervous. Not just in like a pandemic sense, but also like what the hell is wrong with you people kind of sense. But yeah, that's kind of my general sense my reaction to today's news was, shit, we might actually lose this season, and God, if this doesn't make people pause, then I don't know what will.
Yeah, man.
All right, let's take a quick second here, pay a couple bills. When we come back, we are going to introduce, we'll have a shorter second segment here, and then we'll introduce the concept of the what-ifs and how we're going to approach them on those episodes. And then in the third segment, like I said, Pete and I will get into a couple of our favorite what-ifs that we hope to get to over the course of the next few months. So I made that Goober joke to Jen, and she requested that I quarantine myself.
I mean, to be fair, she's been doing that for a few years now.
About 15.
Unrelated to virus, yeah.
About 15. But yeah, that was not exactly a shining moment in our relationship. The look that she gave me, I was like, oh, all right, sorry, I'll just pour another glass of wine and act like that didn't happen. So let's talk about what ifs, though. The way that we're generally going to do this and the episode breakdown on the shows that we do this, and there's any number of them. So if you guys have any what ifs that you want, send them to @AnthonyIrwinLA, @LakerFilmRoom. You can send them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes to guarantee that we address those ones. You want to send them if you're subscribed on Patreon, whatever. But the way that we're going to talk about them, we're going to summarize the situation itself. in segment one and what all went into it, why it might have fallen the way that it did, yada, yada, yada. In segment two, we are going to get into what it might have looked like if it was something that, you know, didn't break in the Lakers' way. What if it looks like, what would it look like if it did break in the Lakers' way, or if it did break in the Lakers' way and it could have gone the other way, what that might have looked like. And then in segment three of those episodes, we're going to get into, you know, kind of the ripple effects that all of these have. And I think that to me is always the most interesting aspect of this, is where, you know, sometimes you look back on something and you say, man, what would it have been like if something breaks in my direction and everything would have been all right. And then you kind of think about it more and you're like, well, wait, but that doesn't happen that way. That doesn't happen that way. Like, my favorite all time for me personally is I was probably a better baseball player than I was at, like, I was short, so I was shortish.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. That was my best sport, even though it was my least favorite sport.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I was, you know, so I always kind of wonder, like, what would it have been like if I really pursued baseball? And then I think about it, like, man, it would have been fun. I might have been able to play beyond high school or whatever, and that would have been exciting. But then I think about it, I was like, well, wait, I met Jen through a basketball teammate, and then if my buddy Mark doesn't introduce me to Jen, then everything.
Yeah, it's all these sliding doors scenarios.
Yeah, so then I'm making Rudy Gobert jokes to nobody. do you have, let's start on a personal, do you have like a personal one in the way that, you know, I just talked about with me playing baseball, like how things go if, you know, something might have felt what would have worked out better for you in the short term, but holy hell, the long term.
Yeah, I've got one, but I don't want to share it on air. It's a little personal. Let's move to the Lakers.
No. That's perfectly fine. I bet you're thinking, like, everybody listening right now sees the thought bubble over your head. What if I just stuck with Darius? And didn't.
You got me. I try not to talk too personal about my life.
Yeah, no, that's fine. All right, so the Lakers, what if that comes to your mind though? Where are you at there?
I'm going to go the other direction, okay, because as we were talking about this before the show, I was like, all of those are like the hypothetical works out for the Lakers, mm-hmm, right? The one I've been wondering about lately is, so we were talking about the 2000 season in yesterday's episode and the Lakers kind of overcoming, and we were talking about that game 7. What happens if they don't come back in that? Because they got swept the year before by San Antonio. They got swept 2 years before that by Utah. 3 years before that was the 4 air balls in Kobe's rookie season. Utah was a better team than them, but all that pressure that I described leading up to that, what if they don't come back? You already have some kind of existing tension between Shaq and Kobe. Phil was here and, you know, is no longer perceived as the savior. What does that do to Portland? There are all sorts of, you know, what ifs from that are certainly worth wondering about. Like, most of mine are on the opposite end. Like, you know, things would have worked out for the Lakers. But yeah, do they go on like some that crazy 2001 playoff run if they don't already have a championship run under their belt and know how to do it? Does something happen?
Do they get somebody more solidified as an NBA player to fit alongside Shaq to do the winning that was expected of Shaq teams?
Right. Wasn't there like a Jason Kidd rumor? I know that Bynum later in his career, but there were always, you know, slightly older players that were tied to the Lakers in trade rumors at the time because Kobe was a few years younger than Shaq. I always kind of wonder, like, well, if we don't come back there, like, how different does the next decade even look? Or does it not look any different at all? And they just run it back. But I do think that particular quarter is really a turning point in Lakers history.
It really is. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'll get to mine and we'll throw a couple more out there. We have a list to read from here, so we'll break, you know, I'm not going to break any of them down, but I just want to really introduce the concept here, get you guys thinking about some that might come to your mind so that you guys can send them in and do my job for me. Little nervous about how much you laughed at the Darius one, can't lie. All right, so my kind of Lakers what if, you could always go with the obvious ones, right? The Vito trade, you know, how does that go? I actually kind of wonder if that actually turns out well.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
You know, we'll get to that here in a bit.
Sorry.
But yeah, but that's a good... my favorite kind of Lakers what if is, and I'm going to go the opposite direction here. What if Karl Malone doesn't get hurt in 2004?
Yeah.
Because he blew his knee out, and the Lakers weren't equipped because they used so much of their resources to get Gary Payton, to get Karl Malone, to have that big four, basically, even though Karl Malone and Gary Payton were both obviously well past their primes. But what happens if he doesn't blow his knee? And I would contend that I think they beat Detroit.
Interesting.
I think, you know, they might have been too broken chemistry-wise to have won anyway.
Sure.
But I just think from a talent standpoint, I thought that was a, you know, the Lakers had a better team there. And if they win that championship, does Kobe, you know, does Shaq still demand out? Or, you know, does Kobe still demand Shaq to be traded? You know, if they, because I think they wound up, so the way that worked, right, they won the three in a row, lost to the Spurs, right, and then lost in the finals. Or was that, do I have that reversed?
No, you have that correct. In 2003, Robert Horry shot like 2 for 137 from three,
yeah,
and he rimmed out in a game five. He'd hit so many big shots, and he just missed one more that would have put us up 3-2. But then the Spurs went up 3-2. They went on to win the series. Then we lost to Detroit in 0-4.
Yeah. So if they wind up winning, you know, the four championships in 5 years. Do cooler heads prevail, and does Shaq and Kobe try to work things out, or was it just done? Or, you know, do they just say, you know what, we did our work together and we move on maybe more amicable terms or whatever? But how do you think, you know, how do you think that plays out? What does that rank for you and your all-timers?
It's up there, but it's not terribly high, because I still don't think we beat the Pistons.
Yeah.
I think that Detroit was, they were defensively phenomenal, and they were young, right? Like, there were a lot of young legs versus old legs type of possessions, and Kobe was pretty bad in those finals.
Yeah. He played so dumb. Ugh. It was brutal.
Well, that was part of like the growing, or not growing, but all the way that fissure between them. Like, Kobe was ready to not be Shaq's sidekick anymore. And even though he had really, you know, pulled close, and some would argue even by the 0-2 title, he was never going to be perceived that way so long as they were sharing a team. And it was important to Kobe to show what he could do. He'd won multiple titles at that point, was still 24, 25 years old, and you know, wanted to prove that he could go it alone. And that's Kobe's personality, right? Like, is to be that alpha kind of guy. So if Shaq doesn't go, then I do think Kobe signs across the hallway with the Clippers, and talk about a sliding door scenario, right?
Yeah.
But I think that things had run its course, and that Detroit was so much like, they were so much faster than we were.
They liked each other. Such polar opposites in terms of chemistry.
And they're also polar opposites in terms of roster construction, right? Where we were very top heavy. Even if Karl Malone was healthy, we go, what, 3-4 guys deep?
Yeah.
And that was a team where Payton, they had like bad four. There. Yeah. Yes, he was. And they had like 4-5 all-star or near all-star caliber guys. Chauncey Billups, Rip Hamilton, Rasheed Wallace, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun Prince. Like, they were a good team. And I think it's harder in some ways for top-heavy teams to beat really good teams like that if there's that big of a foot speed advantage and they're not like I think of like Lakers versus OKC in 2012. OKC wasn't old enough yet. Lakers versus, say, Pelicans this year, theoretically, right? Mm-hmm. The Pelicans are too young to beat a team like this Lakers team. And the Lakers are still pretty fast, even with older legs. But the Pistons were a lot of guys in their prime or close to it. And like, we had a lot of old dudes, and even the guys who weren't were like Slava, right? And, yeah. You know, we had a couple bigs on that team that were kind of slow of foot. I remember watching those and they're like, God, they're so much faster than we are. So I don't put it terribly high because I don't share your opinion. I actually still think they beat us in that series.
What would be higher for you then?
What if Andrew Bynum doesn't get hurt in 2008? Right.
They don't.
I think they still do trade for Powell.
Okay.
Do we have a shot at the 08 title at that point?
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yes. Yeah. If Doc Rivers gets a hold of Kendrick Perkins' rotting corpse, then yeah, I think the Lakers get to say this budding star in Andrew Bynum might have changed the outcome of that series.
Andrew Bynum was a monster. He was, I would argue he was never the same after that. Like, yeah. He was really good. He made an all-star game a couple years later, but he was a monster in and not playing a ton of minutes, but he took over the starting position from Kwame, I believe, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering this correctly. Yep. He took over that starting position, you know, maybe halfway through that season. But he was just putting up monster numbers in limited minutes. And Kobe was having so much fun just like having this dude to just throw it up in the general direction of the rim. Yeah. And
just it looked tearing like that the rim scene down. In Semi-Pro when they invented the alley-oop. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Everybody's just chucking the ball at the rim, and Andre 3000 is getting up there and dunking. But yeah, the Bynum was always funny to me because he had some of that Zion to him, like this current iteration of Zion, where he was just like, "Oh, I'm near the basket, I can dunk." Bang, you know.
Yeah, or he was dunking everything. He was blocking. His true shooting percentage that year was 65.9%, which is just absurd for the type of usage he was on. And he was just 5% block rate, which is really, really high. He was just a monster around the rim, just gobbling up boards all over the place. But only played 35 games that season. And so, I mean, I'm not certain that we still trade for Powell, but like for what was available then, like, or for what it cost us, like, I still think we do. Mm-hmm. And then, all of a sudden we go from the beginning of that season, Kobe wanting out to, oh crap, do we win a title? It was such a fun year, despite that. But I do always wonder, like, what happens, even not just that year, but going forward, because Bynum kept getting hurt and he was either out or hobbled in future years. Just kind of what happens if Andrew Bynum can stay healthy?
Although one of his injuries, I don't think would have been impacted by that injury, right? The one where Kobe just kind of crashed into his knee. Oh, just
crashed into him?
Sure, yeah, sure. I don't think his other knee being banged up would have done anything there. But, I remember there was a game against Seattle that the Lakers won, and it was a question asked to Kobe. Because remember, the year started with Kobe's trade demand. And then, you know, for like anytime anything good happened, the local beat writers would ask Kobe, so does this change your stance? Does this change the situation? Does this change? And then finally, I'd love to find the game, but the Lakers beat Seattle and Bynum had another monster game. And the question was asked to Kobe, hey, what, you know, does this change anything? And he kind of gave one of those kind of like sly looks at the camera. You know, what do you think? Right. And I was like, he's not going anywhere. We got this, right. You know?
That's right.
And then Bynum goes down, and you're like, oh no, we suck again. You know?
Yes, exactly. And then like 5 days later,
and then Powell shows up. And then, you know, when Powell showed up, there was asked to Kobe, does this change your decision? And he kind of said, like, I'd made my decision to stay when Bynum was playing the way he was. Now Powell's here. Of course, I'm sticking around. So Jerry Buss doesn't get enough credit for his handling of that situation. I guess I'll have one more here to wrap up with my all-time what if. Well, how do you feel? Because this isn't very high on my list, but it's a fun one. How do you think things play out if instead of after they fired Mike Brown, they hire Phil instead of D'Antoni?
I think it would have worked out better just because Phil would have gotten buy-in, I think, from most of the – and Phil really liked Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. And so
– and didn't outright hate Powell. D'Antoni fucking hated Powell for some reason.
That was the problem with – like D'Antoni is a very influential coach, and you see a lot of, you know, the principles from those days. Like you know, a couple of years later, Powell set the record for like best three-point percentage by a big man in NBA history with the Bulls or something like that, right? Like where it's like, oh, he's taking them and actually he's pretty good. But just the timing of – that was not the year for him for – guys who have won titles to be told by a guy who has not won a title that they've actually beaten, you know, en route to those, like, actually, no, you should be doing things totally differently. Mm-hmm. Where if he'd been able to get the buy-in, I would argue that it would have really worked. If Dwight's setting kick-ass screens and Powell is popping out to the perimeter and still a ball handling and more importantly, a passing threat, a high-low type of guy, you know, space kind of four out, one in style, that could have really worked, but you got to get buy-in. There's the human element of it too. And so with Phil, I think it would have gone better. I also don't think who knows how much Kobe playing 47 minutes a game in the previous seven games before he snaps his Achilles. Like, does Kobe not tear his Achilles? Like, how does that look differently? I don't know if we win the title, but boy, we're a lot in a much better position to do that, right? Assuming that Kobe does not go down. That's a good one, and it's way more about personality than it is about scheme and X's and O's.
Yeah, those ones are the fun ones because it's not objective. There's no like right or wrong.
No, not at all.
On what's going on. I would actually take that back even a step further though in that season, and if Nash doesn't get hurt, I think that season plays out way differently. He was a complete shell of himself. He was never really healthy, and the dynamics between everybody were already kind of complicated. And then you bring in D'Antoni, who was more of a Nash guy than a Kobe guy, and I think Kobe kind of ramped up the pseudo or actual, I guess, alpha dog stuff that he wanted to do there. And I think that kind of rubbed everything the wrong way. And yeah, I think Phil made more sense for that roster, not just in terms of scheme, but also in terms of personality. If Kobe considers himself the alpha dog in that room, you kind of have to let that happen. You got to let that work and see how things go. I kind of understood the D'Antoni hire at the time, but I was more Team Phil on that. Do you remember which side on that one you were? Because that was a pretty polarizing night.
Oh, so I was fine with the D'Antoni hire. I hated how they managed it because Phil Jackson had won 11 freaking championships.
Yeah.
Like, you do not interview Phil Jackson, just like you wouldn't interview like Steve Jobs or like somebody at the top of their profession. Like, if you're not going to hire Phil Jackson, bring him up. Don't talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like talk to Phil and then go like, nah, because you put a coach in a position where, like, in his very first game, the crowd is chanting, "We want Phil."
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it was so poorly managed by Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak that, like, if you're going to talk to Phil, then freaking hire Phil. Like, you know what you're getting. And so I would have been fine with either one, but I just thought it was terribly unfair kind of how that shook down in terms of like a coach deserves a chance to be able to implement what he wants to do without, you know, everybody being against him from day one.
Yeah. Magic Johnson, like his tweet after D'Antoni was fired was just like, that was the icing on the cake. That was the Lakers not understanding that, like, if you are going to go, because it was one of the rare occasions where
outsider,
what's that?
outsider.
Yeah, it was
outsider.
One of the rare occasions where the Lakers went with the outside hire. Nepotism wasn't involved. If anything, they like embarrassed the nepotistic hire, and then and then have such a loud voice in the Lakers family shitting on the hire too. You know, it was just a weird situation all around. But this is basically what we're going to be doing for these versions of the episode. So we have the bracket that we've already talked about. I mapped out the 16 teams set up and the seeding on all that. So Pete and I are going to go over that, and we'll have our first, you know, matchup to talk about probably tomorrow's show. And then we'll have everybody vote on it, and then we'll move on to the to the next show or whatever. Well, no, we aren't going to do that tomorrow. We're introducing everything tomorrow or this week. So we're going to do more introductions the remainder of this week, and then probably Tuesday of next week we'll introduce the bracket and the first game. But the reason I'm saying all this is so that you guys know, like, there is a bit of a plan in place given how weird the situation is. So, you know, the better you guys stick around and participate in this bracket thing, the better that's going to turn out. And the more that you guys send us your what ifs and your 2 cents on how it might have broken either way, the better that conversation might be. So let's all get through this together. Again, remain safe out there. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.